It's time for All Things Northwest with Northwest Missouri State University President Dr. John Chizinski. Each month, Dr. Chizinski visits with community and educational leaders about exciting developments and collaborations happening throughout our region. Support for All Things Northwest comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, promoting the community, supporting business development, and growing opportunity for Northwest Missouri. The NCED Business Support Team is at your service. More at nottoway.biz. Support also comes from the City of Maryville, home to Mazingo Lake Recreation Park. The park features the Seacrest 18 Golf Course and the Watson 9 Executive Course. More information about Mazingo's golf offerings and tee times is available at mazingolake.com. And now, the 10th president of Northwest Missouri State University, Dr. John Chizinski.
Welcome to this month's edition of All Things Northwest, a show devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. We highlight the great work and the great play, the collaboration, and the developments throughout our region. And please know there's so much to celebrate regarding Northwest Missouri, Southwest Iowa, Southeast Nebraska, and Northeast Kansas. We here at Northwest Missouri State University and your public radio partners, KXCV, KRNW, hope you're enjoying the beginning of summer, and we wish to extend a fond and grateful thank you to all the fathers in celebration of Father's Day on June 18. I am pleased to welcome you to the June edition of our show. We'll provide two segments this month. In segment one, we feature Sergeant Jake Engel, Public Information and Educational Officer for Troop H of the Missouri State Highway Patrol. In segment two, we feature Gina Bradley, Northwest Missouri State University's Events Coordinator. Thanks for joining the All Things Northwest team, and we hope you enjoy this month's edition. To begin, I welcome Sergeant Jake Engel to All Things Northwest. Sergeant Engel started his career with the Missouri's State Highway Patrol in 1993 as a patrol officer with an assignment to Zone 1 in Holt and Atchison counties. In 1996, Sergeant Engel was transferred to Zone 7, which includes Clinton and Caldwell counties, with the same responsibilities. Sergeant Engel was promoted in 2014 to become the Public Information and Educational Officer for Troop H in St. Joseph, and currently serves in that capacity today. Sergeant Engel, welcome to All Things Northwest.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's great to be here.
Well, we appreciate you being here, but we certainly appreciate your service and those of your fellow colleagues.
Really, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
So the whole topic today in this segment of All Things Northwest, the first segment, is really to talk about safe driving, essentially. But let's just back up for a minute before we talk about texting and driving, reading and driving, whatever, all the distractions that we have. Just in your experience in the State Highway Patrol, as you think about driving conditions, safety of driving over the last 20 years or so, you know, what have you seen over that time?
Sure. You know, things evolve. Everything evolves. You know, when I think back at the start of my career, you know, we talked about safe driving out there on the roadway. You know, things have evolved so much because now we have cell phones. We have distractions like that, everything. But back then, you know, we were encouraging people, you know, don't, when you look down, to change the radio station or to do things like that. You know, the cell phones were just really evolving at that time. So, but just driving in general, you know, the car's not as probably not as technologically advanced as they are now. So there was a lot of things to consider back then, and how that's evolved to today and the challenges we face today. It's changed a lot. Just in my 23-year career, it's changed immensely.
You bet. And of course, road conditions, safety of cars, and as you say, the technology of cars. And so All Things Northwest listeners, we know that many of you are at home right now. Some of you are listening. So just stay tuned to the radio.
That's right.
Please keep driving and drive safely as we talk to Sergeant Jake Engel on All Things Northwest. But Sergeant Engel, I mean, let's start with texting and driving. So, you know, texting has been around now for whatever it's been, decade or more, and talk about the evolution of that and certainly where it's at today.
Sure. Well, you know, cell phones, and cell phones, when we first got them, they've evolved, you know.
Right,
now they're
right.
A computer in the palm of your hand. So not only are people texting, they're looking up information, they can get directions off their phone now. And not that that's a bad thing, don't get me wrong. It's great. Technology can be great. I mean, you know, we can learn so much off of technology. It can help us get to our destination, but can also just be a huge distraction. And when we start talking about distractions, texting comes to mind. It's very popular, especially with the younger generation. It's not exclusive to them, but very popular with the younger generation. That's how they communicate. They don't dial the phone. They text back and forth, and they want to be able to stay in touch instantaneously. So that urge when that phone beeps or buzzes or whatever to look down or pick that phone up, it's a huge distraction.
So as the public informational and educational officer for Troop H, your assignment is to get the word out, to get education out. What do you say? How do you do? What's your messaging to not just the youth, but many others?
Yeah, like I said, it's primarily what we see it in our youth, but it's not exclusive to them, to that age group. So, you know, to get that message out, we do lots of things. I do a lot of work in the schools. I'm in schools all over Northwest Missouri. You know, the 15 counties that make up Troop H, I've worked in every county in Troop H, and it's to go in there and just educate them. You know, my goal is every time I go in there, I say, if I can win one person over, you know, I've done my job. And that, you know, the message is there's nothing going on that phone worth losing your life over, or even being critically injured. And heaven forbid they be involved in a crash where they injure someone else or kill someone else due to that cell phone or due to any distraction. So the message is, you know, it can wait. Put that phone down. I encourage, you know, my kids, I encourage the students I talk to, take that cell phone, put it in the glove box. You know, put it in the glove box to where you can't see it light up. You know, turn it off. If it's really important, if you have to, pull over on the side of the road, pull in a field entrance, pull in a parking lot. I don't care. But we just can't be doing it. Going driving down the road, we can't be looking at that cell phone. It's not just cell phones. I mean, we've got people reading in cars, looking at iPads. We've got people, you know, there's distractions are enormous. I mean.
So a little bit more about the texting side. So I assume that the specific age group that is most impacted is at the youth of the day?
It is.
And what kinds of statistics can you cite relative to crashes due to text and so on?
Do you have Yeah, I do. And, you know, one of the points I drive home when I'm in these schools and I'm talking to our youth is, you know, it's nationwide, but in Missouri, ages 15 to 19 are most susceptible. We lose more kids in traffic crashes from ages 15 to 19 than any other cause, anything else, more than suicide, more than drug overdose, more than anything. And it's traffic crashes. Well, when we break that down, traffic crashes, we look at what's causing these traffic crashes. Well, it's distracted driving. Then we break it down a little bit further. What's the leading distraction? It's cell phones. So it's just getting that mindset that it can wait. You know, when we're driving down the road is not the time to be on our phone, because 100% of our attention has to go to driving. It has to.
So you're going around to the 15 counties, the schools in the 15 counties of Troop H, and, you know, you're messaging that it can wait, put your phone in the glove box or wherever. Well, what kind of feedback do you get from the kids that you're talking to?
You know, I get a lot of positive feedback. I really do. You know, when you're standing in front of a group of kids, you can sometimes kind of see it. The ones that you're connecting with, you can see the look on their face. You know, they're getting it. They're getting it. Mm-hmm. But you have to drive that point home. I mean, to talk to them usually I'm with them for 30 or 35 minutes, you know, when I'm doing a presentation to a particular class or a particular school. And you see them engaging with you. And then you see some kids, you know, you're probably not reaching. And those are the ones, really, those are the ones we're after, is to get their attention. Because, unfortunately, sometimes when their attention is gotten, it's too late. They've been involved in that crash, or they're severely injured, or, heaven forbid, you know, they lose their life in a traffic crash due to texting. So we try to accomplish that in a lot of different ways. I've got some great videos I show the kids. When applicable, I grab somebody from that school. I talk to the administrators. I get a student in there that's been involved in a traffic crash due to texting, and a testimonial from somebody, one of their own age, one of their own, that really hits home. So if we can do that, we try to do that. And I'm open to anything. You know, I'm open to trying new things, anything to reach these kids that we can't do this. This is just something we can't do.
I'm curious. I don't know if you get any parental feedback, or I also know that there's been a pledge to not text and drive kind of deal. How does all that work? Any parental feedback or the pledges?
You know, we do get parental feedback. I get questions a lot from parents. You know, what can I do? You know, what are the things I can do to help my child? And there's a lot of technology out there when we start talking about texting and driving. You know, some of these cell phone companies, there's technology on that phone to where when the GPS is activated on that phone and the vehicle starts moving, it incapacitates the ability for that phone to text.
Right, right.
You know, things like that. There's things we can do, but really it's like anything else. With parents, it's sitting down and talking to their kids. You know, something really interesting we do throughout the spring of the year, usually right before proms and graduations, we do these docudramas where we go mm-hmm. around and we stage a traffic crash. We talk to them about texting and driving. Something interesting we did, you mentioned parents. as in part of that docudrama that we do at these schools, we have a parent come in, and we usually in the crash, we usually have a fatality, a staged fatality. Some kids are usually injured, but we have that parent of the one that's the staged fatality come in and read that student's obituary, their own child's obituary. And you want to talk about hard hitting home. You know, we've had parents break down and you know, start sobbing when they're reading their child sitting right there. They can see him, but reading their obituary. And that's that moment where you can talk to them about texting. You've got their attention. You want to talk about a captive audience. Come to one of these docudramas and watch this unfold. It's really a powerful thing.
So before we transition on to other topics, sure. Anything else about texting and driving and being distracted
sure.
that you want listeners to know about?
Well, I do. And there's some, you know, when we talk about Northwest Missouri this time of year, we're talking about planting season. We've got tractors out there on the roadway pulling anhydrous tanks, discs, you name it, planters, whatever the case may be. A lot of people don't realize this. The average text is 4.6 seconds when kids are texting on that phone.
That takes 4.6 out or something?
Yeah. Okay. They just to take their eyes off the road for 4.6 seconds to send or read a text at 55 miles per hour, that's the length of a football field. And, you know, a point I try to drive home to these kids is, if you're driving down the road, don't do this, but imagine driving down the road and you close your eyes for 4.6 seconds driving down the road. It's basically what you're doing when you're texting and driving. You're going the length of a football field and you're really not seeing what's going on in front of you. How easy would it be to drive into the back of a tractor, drive into the back of an anhydrous tank? Deer are running around. You know, I mean, the list is endless. We could, you know, someone, heaven forbid, run out into the roadway, a child, or, you know, a bicyclist. You know, we have a lot of bicyclists that travel the rural route. You know, the list is endless, but just imagine 4.6 seconds not seeing where you're going. I mean, that's just, nobody would do that. Nobody would drive down the road and close their eyes for 4.6 seconds. But our youth, when they're texting, or not just our youth, when people are driving around the road texting, that's what they're doing. And it's scary.
And we're talking to Sergeant Jake Engel here on All Things Northwest. Sergeant Engel is part of Troop H in Missouri State Highway Patrol. And the basic point is those 4.6 seconds, Sergeant, it's not worth it. There's no text in the world that's worth it. Put your phone away. Put it in the glove box. Turn it off.
Absolutely. Right? It's not worth it.
Well, you mentioned the planting season. Right now, here it is in early summer, if you will, of 2017. And there's weather conditions, and there's all kinds of conditions throughout the year. So can we talk about whether it be spring, summer, fall, winter, wet weather, tornadic activity, snowstorms, whatever. How do you, again, across the depth and breadth of drivers of all ages, how do you communicate the safety part of all this across
sure.
the driving and seasons?
Yeah, well, you know, here in Missouri, we definitely have seasons.
We do.
And they change and they can change.
And they cross over, too.
And they cross over and they can change and change quickly. Yeah. You know, the key, really, when I talk about any season, and I get asked a lot, you know, about winter driving, you know, spring rains, the heat in the summer, people don't realize that's a condition out there on the roadway. The key is planning. It's planning before. It's keeping that vehicle in good working order. Kicking the tires, as I tell people, wiggle the belts, kick the tires, just making sure your vehicle's in tip-top shape, looking at those tires, making sure we've got sufficient tread on there. But planning, it's pre-planning, especially when we're talking about, you know, let's stop and think about this for a minute. Spring of the year, we could have flash flooding. We've had flash flooding this spring. You know, we've had a more than our share of rain. You know, we can't drive into water going over the roadway. Then you transfer, and that's a main concern, you know, during the spring of the year. Heavy rains bring hydroplaning on the roadway. Summer, we've got heat, that pavement warming up, tires start popping like balloons, you know, and then we transition into fall. We've got deer running around. It's harvest season. Then we get into winter. We got slick roadways. What it boils down to is planning, being prepared before you take off down the roadway. And it can be as simple as what I just said, kick the tires, you know, make sure that you're maintaining your vehicle properly. Also, in whatever the season is, you know, maybe throw a bottle of water, a couple bottles of water in the car. That's good year-round. In the winter of the year, having that heavy coat in there. And then we talk about cell phones. We don't want you texting going down the road, but isn't it a great idea to make sure you have that cell phone charger in there, make sure that phone's charged up. So if you do break down, you can call for help. You know, it's just little things like that. It's planning ahead. That's huge when we talk about taking off on the roadway. And I don't care if you're going, you know, you're going 20 miles or you're going across the country on a summer vacation. Plan ahead, think ahead. And really, it doesn't take much. It's very little planning.
And not just the planning ahead, I assume, but also not being in a hurry. Because I think about the heat conditions, the wet conditions, the winter conditions, you know, you're not going to get anywhere too much more quickly. Is that accurate?
That's absolutely right. planning ahead, not only planning ahead what you might need on that trip if your vehicle were to break down, you know, or something like that, but also planning ahead, planning plenty of time in your trip. Right. So we're not feel like we're in a hurry and we're inclined to maybe step on that accelerator a little bit harder, go a little bit faster, you know, which can lead to all kinds of things. So planning ahead, having plenty of time. Also, you know, it's so easy to investigate your route before taking off on a trip. Not only maybe if there's flooding in the area, road construction, things like that. And, you know, you can go on the website, the internet. You can go on our website, the Missouri State Highway Patrol, which you can get a direct link into MoDOT. They'll tell you all the construction zone, what's going on all over the state. So, you know, looking ahead, planning it just a little bit. And we're talking 20 minutes planning ahead just to check your route, plan extra time. Have those things in the vehicle that could, you know, make you more, if nothing else, more comfortable if you were to break down waiting on a tow truck or waiting on one of us to arrive, a Missouri State Trooper to arrive. It's just that planning. I think that's so key when we start talking about driving in the different seasons in Missouri and safety.
And so as we talk about safety overall, can you talk about the number of crashes overall, not season by season, but year by year?
Sure.
And fatalities, because I know that as we drive by the signs, you know, on the highways, and there's signage about this number of motorists wear their seat belts, this many die in a fatality. Talk about some of the stats that you've seen.
Well, you know, right now, unfortunately, we're seeing trickling up from about 2014, 2013, 2014, we hit an all-time low in statewide fatalities, and that's trickling up, and that's concerning to us, because one of our primary missions, if not our primary mission, you know, is to serve and protect the citizens. And protect is to be out there on the roadway, to be seen. We want to reduce those traffic crashes. And unfortunately, they are trickling up. You know, right now in 2016, we had 949 traffic fatalities. That's compared to, as in 2014, we had 766. So not a number we like to see. You know, we want to see that going down. And right now, we're about 2% behind where we were at this point last year. So we are on a minor decrease right now, but we want to see that number much lower. But when we talk about that, the key to that, it's safety belt use, wearing your seatbelt. We've got to get people to wear their seatbelts. Because when we start talking about fatalities, year in and year out in the state of Missouri, it fluctuates, but usually 63 to 68% of our fatalities, those people that were involved in fatal traffic crashes, were unrestrained. And if we could just lower that number, if we could just convince people, it will reduce injury, it will save your life to click that seatbelt. It's so critical.
So close to 70% of all fatalities and crashes, the individuals don't have seat belts.
They're unrestrained. Yeah.
And so, Sergeant Engel, what you're really saying is, you know, plan ahead, take your time, lessen your distractions.
Absolutely.
But also focus on the restraint and put your seatbelt on.
Absolutely. You know, that seatbelt is that critical component. You know, car manufacturers spend millions of dollars crashing cars to make them safer. You know, they're not trying to protect the trunk. They're not trying to protect the engine compartment. They're protecting that occupant compartment. And the key factor, though, is when they're crashing those cars, they've got those crash dummies belted in. And that's the critical link. You know, you can have all the technology in the world in a car. You can have all the airbags go off. You can have all the buzzers sounding when you're getting ready to change lanes, do all that stuff. But if you don't have that seatbelt on, that's the component. That's what they're counting on for you to do, is to click that seatbelt on. When you don't do it, you're taking that key piece out of the puzzle. You know, cars are made to crumple a certain way, crush a certain way, involved in crashes. But if you don't have that belt on, they're counting on you being restrained in that seat. That's how they're building those cars. And when you don't do that, you know, you're really, honestly, you're taking your own life in your hands.
You're listening to All Things Northwest on KXCB Maryville, KRNW Chillicothe. I'm your host, John Jasinski, talking to Sergeant Jake Engel of the Missouri State Highway Patrol, Troop H. Jake is the public informational and educational officer for Troop H. And Sergeant Engel, as you're talking about overall safety, obviously many of us, myself included, get pulled over from time to time.
Yeah.
And talk about what I should do. Let me back up. Listeners, again, if you're driving, we want you to be restrained. Put that seatbelt on, but we also don't want you to be pulled over. But if we are, what should a person like me do as I get pulled over?
Sure. It happens. I don't know if there's a person out there that hasn't been pulled over. And I get that question a lot. You know, what should I do when an officer pulls me over? I mean,
it's a legit question, really.
It's a legitimate.
Especially for the first time.
It's a legitimate question. And, you know, there's a lot of factors that weigh into that. And you know, I'll give you a little bit of a mindset of the officer when he's pulling a vehicle over. You know, a lot of people say, well, you know, he turned his lights on and I took a little bit before I pulled over or whatever the case. People need to remember, too, that one of the critical components for the officer is he's looking for a place on that roadway to pull you over that's safe for him. Maybe that's in a flat, not in a curve, not on a hill crest. So people think we just randomly hit our lights and pull people over. We're putting some thought into it, actually, when we get in behind that violator, if we're stopping them for whatever reason. We want them to stop in a location not only that's safe for us, but it's safe for them as well. So, but, you know, when you get pulled over, people, they get all fidgety, they get all nervous, and I get it. I've been there. You know, I haven't always been a highway patrolman. You know, you get pulled over, it's relaxed. You know, we're going to come up there. We're going to talk to you. We're not going to come up there and bite you. You know, and I just tell people, just relax. When those lights come on, just slow down. You know, pull over to the side of the road as far right as you can. And that's safe for you. That's safety for the officer. He's going to come up there and he's going to contact you. Good morning, good afternoon. He's probably going to identify himself. I'm Sergeant Angle with the Missouri State Highway Patrol, and I need to see your driver's license and proof of insurance probably. But I tell people, you know, even before that, when they're pulling over, just keep your hands visible, because what's going to hurt us? What's going to hurt an officer? It's people's hands. If somebody's going to, you know, pull a weapon or do something, they're going to do it with their hands. So as long as we can see people's hands, we're at ease. So just keep your hands visible. And they don't have to be up on the wheel, maybe just laying in your lap. Just keep them where the officer can see them. That's all he wants to do, is be able to see your hands. You know, for people that have been pulled over, and most people have, you notice when that officer walks up, he's approaching slowly. And he's usually leaning out a little bit. He wants to see those hands. The minute he sees those hands, His alertness, his stress level goes down a little bit, and he's just going to contact you and just visit with him. Just give him the documents that he asked for. You know, if you want to visit with the officer, I've had some great conversations roadside with people. I've made friends roadside with people. If he wants to visit with you, if you want to visit with him, great. If you don't, that's great too. Some people get really nervous, and that's fine. It's understandable. Just relax, comply with the officer's request, and everything usually goes really smooth.
Out of curiosity, so I see the lights behind me. The officer, obviously, the highway patrolman has taken the time to figure out where the hills are and
sure.
safety areas. But I might be assessing, probably not quite yet. I want to get 100 yards further or whatever. Is that acceptable? Because I'm trying to figure out where the best spot is.
No, that's absolutely acceptable. Happens all the time. Somebody may take longer to pull.
Well-lit area.
Whatever. Sure. Some people may take longer to pull over than others, and that's great. If the officer walks up there, if he's not comfortable with the location, he may say, hey, would you mind pulling on up to that gravel road and turning, or would you mind pulling up into that flat up there or into that gas station? And that way, if he's not comfortable, he's going to tell you he's not comfortable. He may have you pull up or pull over a little bit further to the right, he may say, or anything like that. He'll make the situation as safe as he feels he needs to. And then, you know, I get the question all the time, especially it seems like from females that are traveling alone. They say, I don't feel safe stopping in the dark. How do I know it's really a police officer? And that is a legitimate concern for a lot of females traveling out there by themselves. And I understand that. And so if you continue on to a better lit area or things like that, I'm not talking about driving 5 or 6 miles, but I mean, if you can see a well-lit area up ahead or a gas station, if you continue up there and pull over, that's perfectly acceptable. Now, understand, the officer may have some concerns when you don't stop immediately, and he may be a little bit more cautious as he approaches your vehicle. But once you explain to him, hey, I just wanted to come up here where it was a little better lit, it made me feel more comfortable, he's going to be fine with that.
And what about exiting the car, either before asked or when asked?
Sure.
What are the rules of engagement there?
Well, you know, a lot of people, I've stopped a lot of people that right when we pull over, they jump out of the car. And that's fine. We would prefer you not do that. It just puts us on guard a little bit, somebody that exits a vehicle quickly. So an officer may get out, and he may be a little bit sharp. He may be a little bit direct. You know, he may say, sir, ma'am, please have a seat back in your vehicle. We would prefer you stay in the vehicle at least till we contact you. And then some officers leave people in the vehicle. It's really an officer presence. And some officers ask people to come back to have a seat in their patrol car. And that's really officer presence. And, you know, there's people that prefer not to get out of their car. For whatever reason, if they communicate that to an officer and they're able to explain why they don't want to exit the vehicle, that's certainly acceptable. I've been more than happy to leave people seated in the vehicle, but they need to understand that, you know, there is law, there is case law out there that says if an officer does request you to exit, it is a reasonable request. So, but really, if you contact an officer and you convey you're uncomfortable maybe exiting the vehicle for whatever reason, once again, maybe a female traveling alone, that officer's going to understand that. And then, you know, if you are asked to come back to the vehicle, really it's probably just because the officer wants you to come back and have a seat in the car, because a couple things. One, it's safer for him than doing business standing beside the car roadside, because there's been a lot of officers struck, you know, standing out there by the roadside.
Yes.
It's safer for them. And, you know, a lot of times, sometimes they want that driver to get out of their vehicle, out of their environment where they're comfortable, and come back and have a seat in his patrol car, because we like to visit with people, you know, and if we for whatever reason, and if we detect something in the vehicle or something, and we want to just talk about that a little bit further, we don't want to do that standing on the side of the road. We'd rather have them come back where we can visit with them safely in our patrol car.
Right. So to summarize, obviously, if you're pulled over, relax. Make sure that you know that the patrolman's going to come up. He or she will come and talk to you, show your hands, get to a safe spot, wherever that might be, away from hills and all of that. Make sure it's well lit. Show your hands and relax.
Sure, absolutely. You know, because, you know, every highway patrolman, we go through the academy, it's ingrained in us to be ladies and gentlemen that enforce the law. We're going to come up there. We're going to be courteous and professional with you. We just want to visit with you, tell you what's going on. You know, a lot of people we pull over don't even know why we've stopped. It may be a taillight out, a headlight out. They don't even know it. You know, and we just go up there, visit with them. And really, I will tell you 99% of the traffic stops I've made out there on the highway go just smooth as silk, just wonderful. And like I said, I've had the opportunity to meet a lot of great people, visit with a lot of great people, have some great interactions roadside. Even though I'm pulling them over for a violation, even though I might issue them a ticket, I've had some great contact. Just relax. We're just going to talk to you, and we'll get through with our business, and you'll be on your way.
Well, Sergeant Engel, as you think about distracted driving, texting and driving, driving in all kinds of conditions, pulling individuals over, if you could give one piece of advice to motorists, to those listening to All Things Northwest, what would that advice be?
Yeah. You know, if I could get one takeaway today, just visiting with you, one takeaway, really, there's a couple takeaways. One, and that is we've got to wear a seatbelt. I don't care if you're going a mile or 100 miles, you've got to click that seatbelt on. It will save your life. You are 10 times more likely to survive a severe traffic crash clicking your seatbelt on. Reducing injury by 75%, you'll reduce your amount of injury by clicking your seatbelt on. Wear that seatbelt. I beg people, wear that seatbelt, you know. And the second thing is 100% of the job of driving, it has to focus. Your focus has to go to the job of driving. It has to. It is so critical. There's so much traffic out there on the road, so many things going on, construction. You know, if you're driving in this city, you've got all kinds of things going on around you. You've got to be paying attention. And these cell phones, we've got to put them down. We've just got to put them down. And we've got to lower these numbers of fatality traffic crashes and injuries that are going on today right now. You know, like I said, we're on an increase right now, and we want to see that number going down.
Well, Sergeant Jake Engel of the Missouri State Highway Patrol, great advice. We thank you for your service and the service for all those that put the uniform on.
Well, I appreciate that, and it's an honor to serve the citizens of the state of Missouri.
Well, thank you for joining All Things Northwest. When we return, we'll visit with Gina Bradley. She's the events coordinator at Northwest Missouri State University. You're listening to All Things Northwest on KXCB Maryville, KRNW Chillicothe.
Support for KXCV KRNW comes from the city of Maryville, home to Mazinga Lake Recreation Park. The park features the Seacrest 18 golf course and the newly opened Watson 9 executive course. More information about Mazinga's golf offerings and tee times is at mazingalake.com. Underwriting support on KXCV KRNW is provided by Nottoway County Economic Development, promoting the community, supporting business development, and growing opportunity for Northwest Missouri. The NCED Business Support Team is at your service. More at nottoway.biz.
Welcome back to the June edition of All Things Northwest. I'm your host, John Jasinski. We'll now visit with Gina Bradley. Gina is the University Event Coordinator at Northwest Missouri State University. She's a 1987 graduate of Northwest with a Bachelor of Science in Education for K-12 vocal music education. Her husband, Jeff, teaches all kinds of things, has taught here for 27 years at Northwest. Two Bearcat children, Cody and Kayla, and they both have been very successful already in their careers. Gina started her career in event planning some 24 years ago as a wedding coordinator for two local churches. She found that she had the skills, the personality, the makeup, the composition to get it done, basically. I think people should know that Gina started in the cashiering office, moved into university marketing communication, but within all of this, she has been doing commencements at Northwest Missouri State University, planning an event, coordinating some 73 ceremonies from start to finish since April of 1999. So her position as University Event Coordinator we'll talk about as we bring her to the microphone. She's been a guest presenter in several classes. She's just involved throughout campus and well beyond throughout the community. Gina Bradley, welcome to All Things Northwest.
Thank you.
Let's first start with events, not event planning and not about the characteristics of event planners and not what Gina Bradley does. But as you think about events that are planned today, how has event planning evolved over the last couple of decades from wedding planning 20 years ago and the expectations to expectations of events today?
I think really with event planning, even 20 years ago when I started with wedding coordinating, things, there are just a lot more expectations. You know, the brides always, you know, they had their expectations back then, but even in those 15 years that I did that, they just kept wanting more and more. And that just seems to be, you know, the underlying thing that keeps happening. With events, people just want, they expect more out of their events.
And so expectations have always been there, but a person like me who is part of commencement expects more from commencement to commencement. Is that accurate?
Yes, it is. We keep changing things up.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that. And I think listeners of All Things Northwest, I think Gina was offering a compliment to
absolutely,
to John Jasinski there. But as you think about events, there's the planning that goes into them. Those events that don't have event planning probably don't come, if they might come across well, but they're lucky, they probably need that event planning. But as you think about it, characteristics of successful event planners, what are some of those characteristics?
Really, the main thing, of course, is being organized. But it's just paying attention to every single minute and meticulous detail that, you know, things that other people don't think about. It's in my brain, and that's how I start planning my events. Just those little details. But then, you know, you have to be ready for anything and everything. You've got to be able to juggle multiple thoughts in your head at one time. You know, I think about commencement morning. I have 10,000 things to run through my head and, you know, several people that I have to meet with. And then, you know, just getting it all to come together at one point, you know, there's just a lot of things that you have to go through. You have to be physically strong. You know, and when I started this several years ago, I am very, very strong. It's just, it's not for sissies. It's not a job for sissies, because I never know from one day to the other if I'm going to be crawling around on the ground, you know, putting up balloon towers or, you know, whatever. I just do a lot of physically strong things, hauling and pushing carts. And then flexibility. You have to be flexible. You know, if you've got an event that's coming up and, you know, you've got it all planned out, you have to be flexible to know that something is going to happen or could possibly happen to mess that up. And so you've got to be flexible and be able to go a different direction.
Being organized, being physical,
yeah,
but being flexible and agile throughout. And so as you are planning events overall, the important things to focus on when planning an event, whatever the event may be, because as I think about your role, by the way, we talk commencements, but you know, we have ribbon cuttings and groundbreakings, we have guest speakers, you know, the range. Mm-hmm. So what are the kinds of things we need to be planning for?
Planning for is like when I start with a specific event.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Whenever, you know, I have just kind of a checklist that I go through, not mentally, I mean, it is mentally, but it's also, you know, I use a project management system that kind of guides me through that. But, you know, you always have to say, okay, what is this event? Sometimes I really have to ask a lot of questions about what the event is, because if I don't understand it and who my client is and who the audience members will be, then it's really hard for me to start planning that. So once I have an understanding of that, then I, you know, start with the date, the time and place and all of the location, the venue, all of that kind of thing. But, you know, I just go down my checklist of just all the details that I need. You know, things like things that you don't necessarily always think about, but, you know, is it wheelchair accessible? What are you going to order for catering? Are there menu restrictions that you need to think about? Is there parking close to the venue? So, you know, and what are you going to do about those problems if that's part of the situation? So,
and don't, I mean, problems arise no matter what, no matter
sure
how
they do.
Well you plan. Have you ever planned an event where it just came off 100% exactly how you?
Well, sure.
Okay. All right.
Of course I have.
Sure.
No, I, you know, one of my things is I always say plan, and then you make a backup plan. And then you think about everything that could possibly mess up your plan. And then you go from there. So you've got your backup plan, but it's going that one step further.
And if you were to describe your job on campus as the university event coordinator, describe that for our listeners.
Basically, I have two different sections or objectives for my events. The first part is really just me being the head and, you know, the event coordinator for an event. Those are mostly large-scale events that has an open invitation list, things like commencements and the convocations, political visits that we might have here on campus, just things that have an open invitations. Most of the time, I'm working for you. We're having groundbreakings coming up and grand openings, things like that. So it's just those larger events, and I take the lead on those events.
And I was going to ask about what kinds of events do you plan? I've mentioned a few, you've already mentioned a few, but, you know, then I think about retirement parties and
right.
retirement ceremonies and honoring faculty and staff that receive some form of recognition. So I think it goes back to your earlier point of understanding your client needs and really what are we trying to get out of an event as we plan for that event?
Basically, I have another kind of mental checklist that I go through. My objectives for every event, I want my guest to see something fantastic, whether it's decorations, whether it's, you know, the lighting in the venue, just, you know, it's really using your senses, but I want them to see something great. I want them to hear something great, you know, whether it's, you know, I usually make playlists for each event. And I cater to, say, if there's a retiree, I ask them, what kind of music do you like? What do you want to hear at your reception? So I make that very special for each one of them. And then another one is just to smell something good, something yummy. At the very least, if we're not having refreshments or whatever, I don't want them to smell anything bad. So I do have in my toolbox, I have things that can take care of that. Taste something fabulous. Again, you know, if we're having food, and I'm very, very blessed to have Aramark on my side on campus, because I know it's always going to be quality. And then, this is a stretch, but using your sense of touch, I just want everybody that leaves my events, I want them to be comfortable while they're at my events, and I want them to leave with a good feeling. I want them to leave feeling like they've had a really good time at my events.
Well, I see that personally at the various events that you've planned, and you've got that toolkit, if you will, but mm-hmm. I don't think that sense of touch is a stretch, by the way, Gina, because I've seen that at the holiday tree lighting and some other events that you've put together. So as you think about your best qualities, the best qualities that make you successful as an event coordinator, what are some of those qualities?
Probably my best quality is just that I'm very much a people pleaser. Some people think of that as maybe a defect of character, but I really feel like that helps in my job because I want to please everybody. And like I said, I want them to enjoy themselves and I want them to really come away with something good. And if it's a Northwest event, I want them to come away feeling good about Northwest. I don't want them saying, oh, went to an event on campus last night and wow. You know, I don't want them to come away with that. I want them to be happy.
Well, and I'm personally very thankful for your planning. I know that we receive feedback on a variety of events, and most of it pretty darn good.
Yeah.
And, you know, as I think about commencement feedback, we have heard that, wow, what you guys did during commencement, for example, was really good by the participants' vantage point from a number of years at commencements. We do try to call you out at commencement and say thank you to Gina Bradley and to your team. Because I know it's not just
sure.
one, if you will. But listeners, you're listening to All Things Northwest. Gina Bradley, University Events Coordinator at Northwest Missouri State University, is our guest. As you think, Gina, about the events that you've planned, the favorite events, what's the one or a couple that have been pretty special for you to plan?
Well, actually, the best event, I believe, that I've ever planned was actually your inauguration ceremony. I hope you'll agree with that.
I will, only because you planned it. But
we spent months on that. We literally spent months on that. And, you know, just some of the details that I personally put into that, the, you know, things that probably people didn't even notice, but, you know, they knew it was there, you know, how the psych in the, on the stage with the choir behind it and the wind symphony behind it, you know, just little things like even the bust that I brought over and put the medallion, the chain of office on. We had timed the music out perfectly. So when you entered, there was a big swell of the music. So just things like that. And I think just that it was such a big event for us, and it was a very important event in our history. But outside of that one, you know, anytime I do a retirement reception for someone that's been here, you know, gosh, Ron Heller, when we did his, you know, I really pulled out all the stops because, you know, 43, I forget now how many years he'd been here. But when you give your life, that's basically your life. When you give that much time to an organization, I just feel that's a really big time to celebrate. And, you know, I'm kind of a warm, fuzzy, touchy-feely kind of person. And those things really are important to me.
Well, listeners, I want to say that I was agreeing with you, Gina, with regard to your most favorite happened to be yours truly, you know, inauguration. Don't really want it to be about me per se, but I do get it because having been part of that, but also looking back and reflecting 8 years ago and thinking through all of those details, not just the music, but the pageantry and all that you put in. But you do that with every event. That's the thing that I want to make sure our listeners hear. It isn't just for an inauguration. It's every event that we do, no matter how long the event is, how short it is, the various clientele, the seasons, because we do events in the winter and we do them in the fall, spring, and summer. Everyone has that attention to detail. It's very, very impressive. And you mentioned retirement and Ron Heller's retirement, mm-hmm. 43, 44 years at Northwest Missouri State University. Listeners, what you should know is that Gina took time to interview Ron Heller. And Ron Heller, if you know of him, listeners, you know that he has an intense interest in music and records. And so as I think back to that retirement reception, Gina, you and your team, from the ceiling, you hung a variety of records that were Ron's favorites over the years. And, I mean, you walked into that room and you knew, wow, this isn't just cookie-cutter approach. It was
right.
Very special.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What? Why? Well, how did you get into event planning? What has motivated you to make weddings special and retirements special and commencements special?
Well, I'm not sure most people will believe this, but I'm actually a very shy person.
What?
I know. I'm very, very uncomfortable.
All Things Northwest listeners, an alert. I don't think I've ever disagreed with anybody on this program over the last several years, but I'm going to disagree with Gina Bradley here.
Well,
you're a shy person.
Maybe not necessarily shy, but I'm maybe awkward, a little awkward.
No, in you're social, not awkward either.
Social situations. I was always the one, even, this goes back years and years to when I was probably 12, 13 at church. I was always behind the cake table, you know, for any event, because I didn't want to be out talking to people.
Is that why you got into singing too, by the way?
No. but I just kind of, you know, found through that I had a really good knack at just knowing what needs to be done. I think very sequentially. I know what needs to come next. And most of the time, you know, people think of, okay, this is the next step. But I think beyond that, it's if I do this next, this will happen. And then, you know, the ball, I see five steps ahead, basically, is what I'm saying. But I just found that I really had a knack for that. And I just, like I said, I'm a people pleaser, and I just really want people to be pleased with what I offer them.
Two-part question. The hardest part of your job, but also the most satisfying?
I think the hardest part of my job sometimes is just, you know, that understanding of what the event actually is. I mean, retirement reception, that's a no-brainer. I know what that is. But some of the, I'm not sure if I think back. Some of the events, I've really had to do my research to get the information I need to, you know, kind of wrap my head around the entire event. What was the other part?
Most satisfying.
Most satisfying. You know, when I sit down after all the graduates are seated at commencement, and I look at their faces, and I just see such joy, and, you know, then at the end of the ceremony, the way we've kind of changed it up and had it, it's very much a party atmosphere now. But that is so satisfying to me to just see that I brought these 4,000 people here together. They're here because I made this all happen, and it's not about me, but I'm just happy that it came off for them. I'm happy that it went well for their families that are there.
Well, you and I often talk, and we want not just commencement, but any of the events. We want those that are involved to walk away feeling valued, feeling like they're a special part of that day's history, of the institution's history. And Gina Bradley, you certainly do that for Northwest Missouri State University. Thank you for your service to Northwest. Thank you for joining All Things Northwest, too.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap for this month's show. All Things Northwest is a program devoted to all the good about the people, places, events, and stories of our region. We thank our guests, Sergeant Jake Engel, the Public Informational and Educational Officer for Troop H of the Missouri State Highway Patrol, and Gina Bradley, Northwest Missouri State University's Events Coordinator. Thanks, too, to our producer, Lizzie McCoy, a student here at Northwest Missouri State University, along with KXCV station manager, Rodney Harris. Friends, we here at Northwest are a university of champions. Culture wins, as we like to say, and thank you for assisting us in enhancing our culture through your support of All Things Northwest, KXCV KRNW, and Public Radio. Be a Bearcat, ladies and gentlemen. Learn, connect, care, practice civility, and show pride in Northwest KXCV KRNW and Public Radio. I'm John Chasinski. Take good care and keep celebrating and advancing our region.
Support for All Things Northwest comes from the City of Maryville and Nottoway County Economic Development. Theme music for the program was composed by Northwest professor Dr. William Richardson. The music was recorded by vocal music education major Jordan Andrews, piano, music major Daniel Bates, bass, audio and production major Mark Ludwig, drums, and Dr. William Richardson, trumpet. The program is produced by audio and journalism major Lizzie McCoy. Join us again next month for All Things Northwest.